everyone, my name is Mel Cheng, and this is the She Dares podcast. She Dares is a community for adventurous, independent, and daring women. We empower each other to take on new challenges and push ourselves out of our comfort zones through a series of virtual and physical events. If you want to check us out, you can find us at she-dares.com or on Instagram at @_she-dares. Today I'm joined by the lovely Rebecca from Andalouse Skincare. She founded the business back in 2015 with her partner Julian and is now running out of Andalusia in Spain. The reason that I thought she'd be a great guest on the show is because she tells us a very colourful story of her packing up her city life to travel across multiple countries to be with the man she loved. With absolutely no idea what was in store for her, it changed her life in ways she could not have predicted. Her business is now doing extremely well, and I want her to share her story with you. Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thanks. How's the weather over there?
Sunny. 30 degrees or so.
It's absolutely terrible here. Where is spring or summer?
Oh, no.
Yeah. But hopefully soon. I need to get out on my bike.
I think it's just been a weird year for weather. Anyway, we've had actually a lot of rain, and it's actually quite cooler than it normally is right now. And then I guess next week it's supposed to rain all week. So that makes you feel any better.
Thanks so much for being on the show. At She Dares, we're all about pushing each other out of our comfort zones. And I wanted to ask you, in your life, you know, was there ever a moment where you were just like, I'm so out of my comfort zone right now, it's really uncomfortable?
Yes, there's a big one. That was, well, I was moving from Berlin to Malaga to be with the person that I love. And I decided to drive down. I packed up my car. It was loaded with mainly cookbooks and art. And I strapped my surfboard on the roof. And in the front seat, I had my pet rabbit, ZZ Hop. And yeah, we took off at about, it was a Tuesday morning at about 6 a.m. And we were in Paris 13 hours later. But I would think that actual drive was from Berlin to Paris, it was intense. Yeah.
That's a long way to go by yourself, huh?
Yeah. And for that amount of time of just straight driving, I think like 4 to 5 hours is like a pretty comfortable time to stop. But like just powering through and going through, basically I was in 4 different countries in a really short amount of time. It was the first time that I'd been on the Autobahn, but I had never driven on the Autobahn, which, of course, as you know, has no speed limit. And have you done this? It's like when you're changing lanes, that it can look completely clear for miles. And then you're like, okay, it's totally safe to get over into the fast lane. And then out of nowhere, there's this like giant Mercedes behind you, like a huge great white shark, and you're like, oh my god, it's like get over. And so I was when I got through that, actually towards the end of it, just before I hit the Netherlands, I was actually really loving it. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, once you get into the flow, the thrill of just being able to go as fast as you want, it was pretty fantastic, and I have to say I loved it. But I was just getting used to that, loving it. And then boom, out of nowhere, I'm just instantly in the Netherlands. And in the Netherlands, they'd started construction work on a roadway work. So it was these like winding S curves with the orange cones, which is, you know, it's totally fine. Except that at that time of day, it was basically 99% semis and big rigs. So I was completely walled in with semis. So I had one in front, one on my right, one in the back. And we're going at a speed that's, you know, 100, 120 kilometers per hour. And I'm just like, oh my God, nobody stop. You know, it was like this giant train of like wildebeest going into the Netherlands. And yeah, that was pretty white knuckling. I saw this poor soul at one point passing, and he was in a smart car. Just the absolute look of terror on his face, like, because he was actually sandwiched in between, like, and I was in an SUV, but still, yeah, it was intense. Belgium was really terrifying, that stretch. And then I was actually dying to go to the bathroom. And I was just like, okay, next stop. I was like, wait, this isn't like a gas station or something. What's going on? I went down this like long gravel road. And then I ended up in a place that looked like an American summer camp. It was like all wood and forest, but there was no lake or anything fun behind it. And I was like, okay, I don't know if this is right, but I got out of the bathroom, so I go in. And it was like, there wasn't that classic record, like, scratch of, and all eyes are on you, but everybody was like turned and looking. And it was just like, it was just a bizarre, surreal place. That's all I can say. So like right by the door, there was a table with a big guy. And granted, this is about 11 a.m. So 11 a.m. on a Tuesday, big, huge guy eating platters of meat. And I'm like, okay, all right. There's no shame in your food game. Like, okay. Then I go up to the counter, like the bartender, and the bar is super high. There's no chairs or anything, but I can just barely see his like eyes. I was just like, okay, this place is so weird. I got to get out of here. But I went to the bathroom, and then I was like, had that thought of like, this is how it happens. This is how it happens. You go to a dodgy roadside cafe. You go to the bathroom. You wake up in the gully of a pirate ship somewhere off the Maldives. Peeling shrimp and cleaning toilets for the rest of your life. Like, okay.
I'm so glad you're not doing that now.
So I get on. I finally make it to Paris. I stayed with Julian's family for a few days. And then I think like after that experience, though, as stressful and exhausting as it was, everything else just seemed like a cakewalk for the rest of the drive down. You know, driving from Paris to the south of France was like, no problem. Or driving from the south of France to Madrid in one day was just like, piece of cake. So it was actually a really good experience. And I'm so glad that I drove down and did that.
Yeah.
And then from there, I went, I woke up really early in the morning and then drove straight to Madrid and picked up Julian at the train station. And then we drove a little bit more down to Extremadura, like in between Madrid and Andalusia, where I am now. At first, we were going to live in Malaga proper, in the city. And Julian said, hey, if we're going to live in Spain together, let's try something really Spanish. Let's live in the countryside, in the campo, in a farmhouse. And I was like, I don't know.
Bearing in mind, you've just come from Berlin.
Exactly. And I'm before that, San Francisco. And I've lived in London and, you know, and he's from Paris. And I was just like, oh, okay. I'm not really sure about this, but we agreed. Okay. It's just 1 year. So it's just 1 year. We'll give it a shot. I'll keep my apartment in Berlin. Give it a try. And now it's what, 7 years later. And we have no intention of leaving. I think the biggest thing for me is, although I've traveled to Spain many, many times over the years and done different road trips on my own, actually living in the countryside, I was just absolutely blown away by the natural environment here. I think Andalusia, of course, is known for sunshine and beaches and nightlife and the, you know, the super fun culture here of fiestas and Semana Santa and all of that. But there's really, for me, I was like, wow, I was just so blown away by the nature. I mean, you have olive groves and citrus groves and rosemary and lavender and sage and thyme growing wild everywhere. And I saw this and I thought, wow. So my first thought was, I mean, it was absolutely beautiful, but also these are all amazing ingredients for skincare. And although that my background was always in e-commerce and IT, and I have always had a passion for skincare, and that came from just having really sensitive skin, reactive skin, and for years I used just baby products because they were seemed to be the most gentle. And then I discovered natural skincare, and I just noticed like when the ingredients were completely natural and didn't have a lot of things, like just as minimalistic as possible, like the better quality and the more simple the recipe or the ingredients, mm-hmm. the formula, it was just really good for my skin. So I thought, okay, there's going to be tons of awesome skincare products here that are Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't find anything.
Basically, you moving then to the countryside, which was like, no, this is, I don't know if I can do this, has actually almost led you to where you are today.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. I would never have. It was absolutely key to do that. So again, I guess going out of my comfort zone and living in the campo when I'm used to living in our countryside, when I'm used to living in cities. Absolutely.
So tell me how your skincare line came about.
The really good natural products they were mainly all German. And then, you know, there was beautiful English, Scandinavian, of course, French products. But I didn't really see anything in the way of Spanish that were hitting these markers and really like talking about this region and the ingredients. So this was in the back of my mind. And then I was doing volunteer dog walking for a shelter. Awesome exercise. The dogs are that's like their only time that they can come out for a week. So they're in a kennel all week. So you can imagine how happy they are when you take them on a walk. And it's just really rewarding and great exercise. And when I was doing that, I met a woman who her and her friends had an orchard, and they were growing olives and flowers, and they were making olive oil and then infusing the oil with flowers and then adding different essential oils for different ailments, really like sore joints and muscles and things like that. And I thought, oh my God, this sounds amazing. This is exactly what I'm looking for. And she gave me the product, and it was kind of just like in mason jars with a, you know, piece of masking tape saying what it, you know, like anti-inflammatory or whatever. And I was absolutely blown away. It was exactly what I thought could be possible with the ingredients here. And I said, but come on, you really need a different branding. I think you could go somewhere, but we need to do a different brand. So we partnered, and then I worked on it for, you know, a couple of months, basically coming up with this idea that of Andaluz, which means Andalusian in Spanish, or in the Andalusian, it's a dialect here. That would encapsulate everything that this is. So you would get like this natural fabulousness of the region in a bottle that you could take with you. So in a way, it was telling that story of here an homage to the region. Always focusing on getting not only the most, you know, completely 100% organic, but I really wanted to also go deeper into the supply chain and to really help these small producers who have basically given up everything and dedicated their whole lives to sustainable farming. And they're really up against it, you know, to make a livelihood out of that is incredibly difficult. You know, I wanted to really personally help these people. So then from there, it's kind of just over the years, as we've grown, we've had to go and find different suppliers. So it's been like the last 5 years of going around, doing the research, going to the farms, meeting the people, finding out what, you know, when their harvest season is, how they farm, what prices make sense. But I feel like in that way, we're getting the most amazing quality ingredients. So right now we get our olive oil from a private organic farm, and their olive oil has won like multiple gold and silver awards in Europe and in Spain. It's a particular type of olive, but what makes it really great is that they have the olive mill directly in the orchard, and that's quite rare. So normally you have these big, big orchards, you harvest everything, then you send it off to a mill. But if you just think of it as like, as soon as that fruit, whether it's olive, orange, whatever you're harvesting, as soon as that comes off of the main plant, it's like a timer is going off. And every second, those antioxidants are all of the benefits that we love as humans are just dissipating. So that's our oil. That's our oil. And then the flowers, it's actually an English couple that moved from London, and they took a barren mountainside and have now made it into this lush, incredible food forest. So they have a permaculture farm. And so the calendula flowers are just kind of growing with all of the other plants, and then they're hand harvesting.
I think there's so many people these days struggling with imposter syndrome and stuff like that. And so when I was listening, you know, to your story, you know, you've come from tech and e-commerce, and then you've just done this epic journey across multiple countries by yourself. And now you have a skincare company. And even though you were somewhat, you know, passionate about skincare, how on earth did you know that you could do it, that you could create this thing now? Because you're talking about all these amazing different things with the olive oil and what makes it better. And how did you know that you could do that? And was there any point where you were like, I don't know what I'm doing?
Oh, yeah. I think that's daily. But, you know, like with each new challenge, it's like, what? But so if we go back to like when I first started, so I put the brand together and, you know, I think it took me about 2 months and like to put the packaging, the whole like the brand concept together and, you know, get everything bottled and set up. And then I literally took it to market. So I literally took it to a test market, to a farmer's market. And I sold from there. And I had no idea, to be honest. I thought, you know, maybe it's just me who loves it. And that's fine. But if nobody else likes it, it's not a good business idea. So guess what everybody's getting for Christmas? You know, that's how I that's how I looked at it. And it turns out that I sold through everything, all the inventory in 1 month. Then with that little bit with the profit, then I would always reinvest. I've never taken huge jumps. I've never said, oh my gosh, this idea is so awesome, I'm going to put 10 grand behind it because I think it's the next best thing. I don't operate like that. You know, I came from testing. So, and that's actually a key thing, is that I use that software background of project management and testing in all of the iterations. So as I'm going along, you know, at the market, I was constantly getting feedback and like really trying to get the negative feedback. You know, I want you to tell me what's wrong, because that's the only way that I can improve.
Totally. You don't want to hear people going, oh yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you do, of course, but what else?
Yeah, exactly. What's wrong? Tell me how I can make it better. So it was always that, like always listening, always asking with the customers, paying close attention to them, and then basically changing the whole product line based on that, you know, because I mean, there were definitely products that I absolutely loved, but if the sales weren't there coupled with, you know, so-so feedback, then unfortunately that's, you know, that product will not stay in the lineup. So that was back in the day when I was basically making all of this in my kitchen and then selling it, you know, at these farmer markets. But then it came to a point where it's like, okay, do we want to keep going and actually go commercial and have things bottled in a laboratory? I mean, I send them all the ingredients, but legally it has to be done in a legal lab or bottling facility, right? Plus, you have to register the business, of course. You have to pay taxes. You have to have all of the products safety tested for multiple things. You have to register the products in the EU. So and that all just seemed really overwhelming. So I was like, oh gosh, isn't there just an agency that could do this? And then I was shopping around for agencies that could do the testing and registering with the EU. And I remember like they were charging anywhere from, you know, a few thousand to upwards of like 10 grand per product. And I was just like, oh, good Lord. And then, so I just went to this website where anyone can do it for free. And it's not hard. It's actually like, it's like far more complicated to set up a Shopify website than it is to register. I mean, it's like, and it's free. And it's just like, oh my gosh. So it was like, Right. And then the other testing, the lab actually does that for you. So when they formulate your products, they'll tell you, okay, you need like this type of preservative for these types of ingredients at these amounts. But then they'll also do all of the safety testing for you. And it's never thousands, you know, it's ridiculous. Sometimes it's just a few hundred euro or something. And it's just, it's part of the whole like package. So I think it's just a part of just kind of getting in there and figuring it out. Of course, you know, I've made mistakes and I would have changed some things, but I feel like I made the best decisions I could at the time with the information that I had, you know?
That's awesome, Rebecca. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you.
Where can people buy your product?
It's Andaluth Skincare. So A-N-D-A-L-U-Z Skincare, S-K-I-N-C-A-R-E .com. That's the best place to find our products. And on social, it's the same thing. It's on Facebook and Instagram. It's Andaluth Skincare, one word.
You know, as part of the show, every guest that I invite on gets to give me a dare. Hopefully the listeners are going to join me. What is my dare?
Okay. Your dare is to busk.
Do you know how much I can't sing?
Is it too much?
I asked for it, you know. I want to be pushed out of my comfort zone, and I want everyone to see that you don't have to be great at everything, because I'm definitely not. Do I have to sing a particular song?
I have a song picked out for you. And I put a lot of thought into this because I wanted a song that everyone could recognize, even on a street corner in Austria. I wanted something that was upbeat. And the lyrics, I think, are really on point with She Dares. It also happens to be my favorite video from the 80s. And, you know, the range is a little tricky, but it's nothing that can't be made up with some killer dance moves and possibly glitter. So, you ready?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
It's Take On Me by A-ha.
Okay. I'm definitely going to have to get the glitter out for that. Yeah. I will give it my best shot.
I hope you still want to talk to me after this.
Of course. Thanks so much. And I speak to you soon.
All right. Talk soon. Thanks so much.
I'm just thinking about the dare and I'm listening to Take On Me A-ha song over and over. And wow, it is so high, but it's also got such a long intro. I'm going to have to entertain like that whole time for the intro because people are going to be watching. Like, I put my hat down, the music kind of starts and the intro's going, and then they're going to like expect this amazing, amazing singer. Yeah, it's getting worse in my head day by day. Well, no, I shouldn't say day by day, hour by hour. So I've been desperately trying to plan my busk session, and honestly, I've had quite sleepless nights about it. I'm kind of panicking a lot. I've quite a bit of anxiety around it, and I'm just not sure I can do it, which is not what She Dares is about, but also I'm kind of thinking that it is. I mean, yeah, when Rebecca said I should busk, I thought, that's hilarious. But I guess it's taking on another level, and I'm just not quite sure I'm ready for it yet. Just thinking about the dare, and I just honestly don't think I can do it. I'm really sorry to let you down, Rebecca, and everyone, I don't think I can do it, honestly. It's too big. It's Friday night and I'm having some friends over, and maybe I can do it with them at some point. Let's see what they say, but you know, it could just be like a local thing and not all of it because I'm really panicking about the length of it as well. Let's see.
I mean, the thing is, like, I totally, like, I would never want to do it myself.
No, neither would I.
But I definitely want to support you.
From a distance. From a distance.
Thanks a lot,
guys.
Right next to the
belly.
Yeah.
No, we will all come. Yeah. But I really think you have to
do
it.
Do you know, I think it's worse if everyone's there. Because then,
no, it's better.
No, I think it's better.
It's better. It's just a bunch of friends having
and then,
fun.
Like, yeah, and then afterwards, your adrenaline levels are going to be...
Why don't you try it now and see how you feel.
Why don't we go out front?
I don't know the words. Take on me, take on me, me on, take on me, I'll be gone. That was horrendous. So I'm just riding my bike in the rain and I'm thinking about last night. You know when you've had a really, really drunken night out and then you wake up in the morning and you regret what happened? I'm kind of feeling like that, where I don't regret doing it, but I'm like, oh man, it's going to be so embarrassing and I'm not sure that I want it to go out. That's kind of how I'm feeling right now. But, you know, the more I'm riding, I'm like, it's fine. I kind of go 50-50. It's totally fine. Everyone's going to find it hilarious. And then on the flip side, it's like, please don't push this life. So it's been a few days since I was singing. I've kind of lost my voice a little bit. It's fine. I've not had too many sleepless nights. So that's good. I am just aware that this is going out to the world. So everyone will get to hear my beautiful voice. It's not the end of the world. It's okay. I feel fine with it that I've done it and it's over and I don't have to do it again. I hope there is no other dares around singing. That's all I will say.